Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is August 7th, 2014. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I just got back from the polls. Tennessee primaries are today. One of the reasons I wanted to get over there, despite the thunder showers, was to make sure my Congresswoman, Marsha Blackburn, is reelected. She voted against both bailouts and Obamacare and ripped Al Gore up over climate change in public testimony, all of which I'm deeply grateful for. Events. We're preparing a survey to send out early next week. We're considering now two one-day events, one in Northern California, one in Southern California, that will be a follow-up on many of the discussions that were started or continuing at the San Mateo Conference. If you've expressed an interest or participated in recent events, you'll get one. If you want to make sure that you're part of the survey, let us know at survey@solari.com or feel free to call customer service. Our theme tonight is big expensive lies. We're watching a lot of big expensive lies. One of them has been the drumbeats on Ebola, which reached a fever pitch coming into the U.S.-African summit. And the result was that the U.S. investment interests got a lot of what they wanted. The Ebola certainly showed what the U.S. media can do to tourism and the economy in Africa when it wants to. McKinsey just published a piece on African investment African investment opportunities, so I put that up on the blog. Take a look. But Reuters reported, let me just read from Reuters on the U.S. summit. African leaders on Tuesday called for a deeper economic relationship with the United States, hailing investment pledges totaling more than $17 billion at a Washington summit as a fresh step in the right direction. U.S. and African companies in the World Bank pledged new investment in construction, energy, and information technology projects in Africa at the U.S.-Africa Business Forum, including several joint ventures between U.S. and African partners. So the lies on Ebola have been coming so fast and furious that I asked John Rappaport to join me on the Solari Report on August 21st to review what is happening, it means to you. What I would love is to see, now that the summit is over, the Ebola drumbeats go away. My big concern is that they won't, that instead it will be now used to push for mandatory doses of something in North America that could be harmful to your health, or an effort would be made to plant or falsify cases in the U.S., particularly if they're worried about U.S. bank closings or other actions that deal with the liquidity problems this fall in the financial system as the Fed tapers. So, but the lies are swirling around Ebola, on the Ukraine, on Gaza, all of them big lies. That's not the major story. These are symptoms. The major story is that the slow burn is fraying and the empire is stuck in the mud in a variety of different ways as it tries to achieve its goals. And so it's an uncomfortable place for everyone, and it means the risks of more covert operations, war, and engineered natural disasters is rising. Money in markets. As I said, the slow burn is fraying. I wrote a post last week called The Slow Burn is Fraying. I followed it up this week with one called Something is Up, and I go into some of the liquidity issues and the big lies. If you look around the markets, there's real concern about liquidity in the fixed income. I put up an article about reductions in liquidity in the European bond markets. We've talked about it since the wrap-up all year long, because we knew it was going to be one of the big issues this year as Dodd-Frank went in and the taper took effect. The SEC has promulgated their money market rules, and we see large brokerage firms reacting and making adjustments in what kind of options they offer customers in terms of cash management options. And now we have the regulators rejecting 11 of the fail-safe plans from the big banks, and you kind of wonder what that's about. And we also see big adjustments in the financial markets all around. Make sure your custodian and banking arrangements are with sound institutions. Yes, you want to have deposit insurance, but also make sure your bank or and credit union is also sound and well-managed on its own basis. You don't want to override the fundamentals with deposit insurance alone. I also wrote a commentary, it's up at the front of the blog, called The Housing Pump and Dump is Over, and I think one of the latest symptoms that something is really up and there's real concerns in the administration, in the U.S. government, about liquidity issues is we're seeing a wave of mortgage-related settlements, which is absolutely dazzling. And it's why I say that the dump is finally coming to an end. As I said, the Fed taper is coming to an end. I have said many times, I think they were having a shredding party. And so it's interesting to see that all these legal liabilities are being cleared, big settlements being negotiated with Goldman Sachs, with Bank of America. Bank of America is by far the biggest one, smaller ones. $17 billion at Bank of America. Citibank has signed a $7 billion one. Morgan Stanley and is a small deal. Citigroup has a small deal with the SEC, only about $300 million. And of course, we've talked about the Ally Financial and ResCap bankruptcy proceeding. Goldman is negotiating $1.25 billion, but because of Goldman's role as the brains behind, or as part of the brains behind the housing pump and dump and the strong dollar policy, that one's going to be a very important and sensitive one. Finally, AIG is settled with shareholders for about $1 billion. So somebody's really trying to clear the decks. I think one of the reasons is Treasury needs the money in their coffers before the appropriation members return in Congress. This is a lot of money, going to be very good for the Department of Justice appropriations. So I think that's part of it, because the appropriators are going to finalize the new budget before October 1st. But I think the administration wants this cleared before the primaries are over and the campaigns for the November elections are in full swing. The electorate's really mad about bailouts and financial issues. And so better to kind of clean this up and get this out of the way to coincide with the ending of the taper. And I finally also feel they want the money in before any liquidity events. So they want to get their checks before the liquidity events start, including any bail-ins. And again, one of the reasons I get nervous if Ebola starts showing up in North America is I take it as a sign that they want to be able to have the option to have a bank holiday by any other name. So let's just see more of that with John Rappaport. So why is all of this a concern? It's a concern because we have now a very highly centralized system with tremendous leverage. And of course, centralization and leverage both increase the variability of possible prices that could occur in a market. The beauty of a market system is it regrounds prices every second, every minute, every day. And so the variability of what can happen, the pendulum can swing and will swing in a much wider range because everything's been regrounded. Now, with this kind of centralization and this kind of leverage, you have an unbelievably wide swing of how the pendulum could go. And I think that's why you're seeing more and more interest in money moving into real assets behind the scenes. So whenever you can own something that's real or own or control investments and assets that generate a cash flow, preferably what we call an inelastic demand. So it's very important to be grounded in things that are real, because the funny paper is slowly diminishing and we're going to get back to the real fundamentals. There is concern about what's happening in Ukraine for many different reasons, not the least of which is what happens when you get these kind of sanction fights that really tamper down on global growth and global trade and global trust. Part of my concern about the sanctions is they really have revved up now coming out of the Bohemian Grove. And so I see that as a sign that the Grove has decided, the people at the Grove have decided to play hardball in the Ukraine, which is kind of interesting since I think, there's a fair amount of breakaway representation in the group that gathers at the Grove. We see an escalation of sanctions last week and this week, and in response, Russia has just banned the purchase of U.S. food. That's approximately a $1.3 billion export that the U.S. exports to Russia in the agricultural area. But they're also banning European fruits and vegetables. The agricultural trade with Europe and Russia is about $15 billion. So fruits and vegetables are probably a much bigger number for Europe. Russia has a GDP to debt or debt to GDP ratio of about 9%. To give you an example, the U.S. has 74% is estimated by the end of the year. Japan has over 200%. U.K. is about 90%. Both Italy and France are over 100%. That's a very tiny amount of debt as GDP. So you're talking about a certain kind of economic independence that was hard won as a result of sort of the rape of Russia in the 90s. But so they have 9% of GDP, very, very low global debt internationally. And they have oil and gas reserves that give them a reliable export cash flow, particularly now that they've done the deal with China and probably are in a position to do deals throughout the BRIC group, who sort of at this point are divided from G7 by some of these economic issues. So they certainly have the capacity, given their landmass, to increase agricultural self-sufficiency, and this is going to help them do it. Putin has been very clever in his information warfare. Every time the media tries to basically put them in a corner, Putin's done a very good job of squabbling back. We see headlines this week that I will put up on the blog tomorrow about Putin basically putting a team to work on information warfare through social media. And of course, they've created RT, which is doing very well in this country. So there's a real effort to do information warfare back. I think part of that is they just granted Russia this week, granted Edward Snowden a 3-year residency. And it's inconceivable to me that Russia behind the scenes does not have some support from the BRICS, who are irritated about all sorts of things, not the least of which is the NSA revelation. So Russia has a lot of wherewithal to hold out. Now, we see an announcement by the Polish foreign minister and then Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel intimating that Russia is amassing troops on the just east of Ukraine's border and implying that Russia is about to invade. And of course, messages back from Russia, and this is part of the social media story, that this is not true, that every effort is being made to position them as somebody who is aggressing when they're not. But it certainly does look like coming out of the Grove, there's a real pressure to come down hard on Putin or create some kind of land war in Eastern Europe. It's not a pretty sight. Not surprisingly, the Wall Street Journal reports this week, a new Wall Street Journal NBC News poll, that 76% of U.S. adults lack confidence that their children's generation will have a better life than they do. 71% of adults think the country is on the wrong track. That's an increase of 8 points from their June survey. 60% believe the U.S. is in a state of decline. What's interesting about this poll, and the reason I wanted to talk with you about it, is that now they're basically holding Washington accountable. 79% increased some level of dissatisfaction with the American political system. And basically a message to Washington, we blame you for the situation we're in. Given what I've described in the Dylan Reed story, and I always try and get you to watch Sir James Goldsmith video, I agree, it was engineered. So they have reason to be angry, and it's going to be interesting to see how this comes out in the election this year. I think the elections could prove very interesting. I have one other commentary that I put up this week called Data Bubbles, and it's about the fact that there is more and more information in the corporate media of less and less relevancy. It's kind of, as far as I'm concerned, it's reaching a very complex crescendo of irrelevancy, and it will be interesting to see how the corporate media copes with whatever interesting events will happen as liquidity tightens into the fall. Let's just take a look and round up on the markets. The bond market is up about 2.5% for the year, but there is a shift to quality. High yield bonds, which had been doing okay, are very much off. We're beginning to see the signs of a summer correction. So it'll be interesting to see if bonds continue to look more attractive against both S&P and emerging markets are up, about 3% for the year, but weakening from where they've been. Gold still ahead, up about 8%, but the charts look very weak. And again, I just think part of this is summer, although the events in the Ukraine and the different sort of distrust in the system, or events that cause distrust in the system, I think are wearing on everyone. And as I said, I expect as part of this, a move to quality. What that means is a much more complicated discussion that we're not going to have tonight. But I think quality today is very different than it was 5 years ago. So if you shift to quality in 2014, it's going to look very different than it did in 2008 and 2009. The shift from 2.0 to 3.0 that I introduced in the annual wrap-up is accelerating. More and more reports that physical traffic in stores is down, whereas online shopping is up, that print ads are down and mobile ads are up. There's a very good assessment, brief and to the point, on the investment environment from the Singapore Wealth Fund. It echoes a lot of the other really good investment leaders, basically, and it's up on the blog if you want to check it out. Basically, what they say is the opportunities to achieve high returns in the development market are diminishing as the market is high and growth is slowing, and the opportunities will be in the areas of growth in the emerging market in the long term, but it's hard. It's just hard to make good returns overall. What they were nice enough not to say is everyone is struggling with a brutal debt overhang, and it makes a difference to the GDP all around. So check that out. The title is Singapore's Sovereign Wealth Fund Warns of Challenging Times. You've heard that expression on the Salieri Report, challenging. Our hero this evening is Cheryl Atkinson. Atkinson resigned from CBS News in March this year, reportedly due to frustration over what she perceived to be the network's lack of dedication to investigative reporting. It's amazing it took her that long to figure it out. She's working on a book that is not out yet, but I've certainly put myself on the waiting list to get, called Stonewalled, about her experience. She's had very notable successes on a lot of stories that were a little bit too sensitive for the powers that be, one on Fast and Furious, but another, and that's how I learned about her, was from John Rappaport. Apparently she nailed some of the lies on swine flu, and I think that's an important story given what we're watching on Ebola, and we're going to talk about it with John more when he comes on August 21st. But Atkinson is a perfect example of the really top flight investigative reporters that have been squeezed out of the corporate media. I'm amazed she lasted as long as she did. And she's now out on her own. And as more of these people come out on their own, the more we on the internet media can do to really make sure you get the real story, the real deal, and get useful information while there is still time to do something about it. Ask Catherine. We have a lot of great questions tonight. Let me go through them with you. One person asked me if I'd read a book on the history of Zionism, and I have ordered. I would note that a lot of you make great suggestions about books, and it's frightening how many books I either receive in the mail or buy every month. They pile up all over the house and at the den. I will make an effort to read it, and I certainly appreciate all your suggestions. If I don't read 40 books a month, you'll understand, but I will certainly try to get to many of them. Another question, are you aware of Walter Burian and his 15-year crusade to bring the public's attention to the concealment of vast government wealth by hiding it in the comprehensive annual financial reports of all levels of government, on and on and on? Yes, this is something I've spoken about in the Salieri Report many times. My work in the 90s was very much involved with providing place-based disclosure of federal government, but we were going to move on to state and local monies. That includes everything that Walter talks about and many other things as well. I don't promote Walter's work constantly, because I feel that there is, he's not an expert in municipal accounting and finance, and he makes a lot of oversimplifications, which I think can hurt his credibility with people who are involved with those accounts. The gist of what he says is very useful and very important, and so in no way is this meant to be a criticism, but I think he does not give you the story sufficient that you can turn around and do something at your local county board with your state pension fund. But I think looking at governmental funds, flow of funds and assets on a local, county, and statewide basis, if every one of us sat down and got a hold of the consolidated annual financial reports and pulled them apart and started to bring transparency to how governmental money worked around us, I think the opportunities to completely shift our situation in unbelievably positive directions to create local jobs, to help local businesses succeed would be absolutely unbelievable because the law is on our side and a lot of this money can be shifted over. I would also stress you don't want to just look at the financial flows because one of the biggest drains is not through the financial pools, it's by government paying for assets to be created like the underground bases, like the UFOs, like the black budget technology, and then those things end up being owned by private parties. So it is that transfer of real assets off the balance sheet, which is as if not more powerful than the games around the financial assets. So when you look at the balance sheet, think about the covert games going on with the real assets and the financial assets together. You don't want to miss the real assets because there's the biggest game is on the real asset side. Anyway, but thank you very much for bringing that up. I need to keep reminding everybody to go get their consolidated annual financial reports and start drilling down. Next question, Jim Poplava referenced 1,400 companies compromising 50% of the world's GDP. Any place we can get a list broken down by sector? I do not know if Jim was referring to a specific index or ETF holding. It's probably a broad market basket, but I've emailed and asked him for which one. I am a subscriber at Morningstar and use a lot of their databases. There are plenty of subscription services that can get you a broad market breakdown of the top. You name the number of companies. In fact, when we created Hamilton Securities Group, we had a great software tool that would, you could put in a list of your ticker symbols up to the first 1,000 of the Fortune 1000, and it would print out a map of where all your employees were so you could see what parts of the world and the economy you were impacting. Another question, what type of night vision goggles should I get to see what is going on overhead? I was told that you really need the $2,000 version. I think that's the, I forget, it's three times or four times. I got a much lower version. I only wanted to go for the $450, so I'm going to try them. And I just have them and haven't used them. It's a good question. I'll see if I can find somebody who can give me the 411 on that. But I thought I'd start with the lower power, and I have wonderful allies who offered to lend me their fancy ones, which I will try to do the next time I get out to California. So I will report what I see. Just watching the recordings that Richard Dolan was presenting were fascinating. I encourage you to watch his presentation on the Secret Space Program stream because he had recordings that showed you what you see through a night vision goggle. Very interesting. Another question, I want to see the old versus the new financial system around me locally, but I'm not sure where I should be looking. I see vendors swiping credit cards on iPhones, et cetera, but I want to validate more. You want to watch the flow cut from one thing to another. So watch the dollar flow and the business cut from the physical to the online. So in many discussions, I've used the example when I drive into any big city, what I'm seeing is big warehouses go up on the edge of the city while the malls empty out. That's one way of watching the physical to the online, but you can also look at statistics about street traffic in the malls versus what's happening in various online venues. I follow a lot of those statistics. Another is to watch the flow from the desktop to the mobile. Watch the money going into apps and other things that facilitate that shift from desktop to mobile. Watch the gross volume of Bitcoin ownership and trading. Watch the cut from US dollar to other currencies in terms of trade or in terms of total size of market cap. You can also watch there are different ways to watch the relationship of the stock market capitalization of given countries to their overall GDP, and you'll start to see the flow cut out over. The thing that is the hardest for me is to see the help you see the covert economy within a place. It's something I've spent a lot of time learning how to do. In fact, one of the things I thought of is we ought to have a community quest to kind of find and see the overt and the covert economy within a place. Kind of think of it as like a covert treasure hunt within your community. There's a wonderful group in Vermont that does community quests that help you understand the natural life and economy in your place. But there's no reason why we couldn't do a community quest to see the breakaway civilization in your place. It's an interesting idea. Andrew, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, Bisaggio, is a man claiming that decades ago he was involved in Project Pegasus, a secret U.S. program involving teleportation and time travel. He further claims in many YouTube videos that he teleported to Mars, where he says the U.S. has a small colony located there, and that he's also traveled through time as part of this project. Do you believe that something like this could be true? I have no idea if Andrew's claims are true. I don't know what the facts are as to our presence on Mars or ability to time travel. If I had to guess, and this is purely conjecture, I think the chances are 90% or better that we have colonies on Mars. If we don't have one yet, we're certainly doing everything we can get to get there rapidly. If you look at the media and the movies and all the marketing to get kids interested in going to Mars and being on a colony on Mars and all these kind of things, it's very significant. So it wouldn't surprise me if we've done it. Do I think there's time travel? If you look at the different sort of unusual situations that have been used to describe evidence of time travel, what I would say is somebody's got it. Whether we have it or not, I don't know, but somebody's got it. So we're seeing time travel, symptoms of time travel happening. Whether we have it or not, I just don't even know how to guess that. If there's evidence of it happening, then I assure you we've either got it or we're doing everything in our power to get it. And I think that's one of the reasons you see this money go down the black budget, because when the leadership feels it's urgent to get this kind of technology, they go through extraordinary efforts and will spare no expense. And that's one of the things we discussed in San Mateo. I was at an over-the-top wedding reception in a county in Northern California last weekend and had an interesting conversation with one of the guests. The man is going to work for Goldman Sachs from his position with a private equity firm. When I asked what his job entailed, he told me that he would be overseeing the management of the personal investment pools of Goldman Sachs employees and executives. I then asked him what he was investing in. Very succinctly, he stated private equity, that is to say, not publicly traded companies. Now, that was very telling, don't you think? Actually, there's nothing new there. When I was a partner at Dillon Reed, even when I was the vice president, I was also married to my second husband, was a partner at Skadden Arps. And both firms had a capacity to do private deals, including for the employees and the partners. And there was a regular flow of investment deals that we saw. If you look at the private equity on things that are sort of rigged in a variety of ways, like the private equity on Facebook before it went public, that very much goes through these different groups. That's been going on for decades. You know, if you looked at our business model when I was on Wall Street, we had one, you know, our bread and butter investment banking and financial advisory business sort of paid for the lights. And then our market operations and trading made us about a 30% return. And then every once in a while, we hit the long ball on big deals that came through and where we took principal positions. That was our biggest money, if you will. So in one sense, this is as old as the hills. It's been going on for decades, in fact, centuries. And it's one of the real reasons you want to work at some of these firms is you get in these deal flows. Now, I say that, let me also specify, it looks to me like more and more of the real return in these deal flows is being hogged by the insiders. So rather than those firms taking a piece, there's more and more. And we've seen a lot of IPOs never make it out over the last 2 years. because the big companies are buying them up, or Wall Street, you know, or various insiders are getting the inside deal. And that's very much part of the switch to shadow banking and sort of doing things covertly. So it wouldn't surprise me if the private equity capacity in these firms is increasing in size. So I think you're very right to point it out, because there's no doubt about it. They're reserving the sort of new hot things to the insiders, and trying to persuade the general public to go into index funds and not notice that they're missing this piece. And I think that's why it's unbelievably important, if you want to be successful over the next 20 or 30 years, you absolutely want to avail yourself of what's going on in the frontier and the emerging markets, because the insiders are going to sort of scarf up a lot of what's available in the developed world. Next question. Please take 30 minutes to watch Dane Wigington's presentation. Dane's a former Bechtel Power employee, and it's a presentation on the drought engineered with global spraying in California. And we will put that up on the blog. I believe it'll be up next week. The question is, since Coast is owned by Clear Channel, why do they have Dane on Coast to Coast? Why is he allowed to tell his story? Excellent question. I believe part of it is it's a steam valve. So you need to have some kind of channels, and by having them, it affirms the credibility of the general system. But I also think the tit for tat on that is there is a lot that is required to go on, which is not that useful, and it sort of muddles up the mix, if you will. Also from the same person asking the question, a question about one of the engineering firms buying up competitors. Are they consolidating power? Yes, absolutely. There is a lot of consolidation going on right now, both in the private equity markets as well as in the public markets, and consolidation in intellectual capital. At the same time, note the cancellation of deals. This week we see Fox, Rupert Murdoch canceling its deal or bid for Time Warner. T-Mobile and Sprint pulls the deal. Their effort to consolidate, they don't think they'll get regulatory approval. Walgreens giving up their tax inversion deal, although they said they're going to go forward with a Swiss acquisition. So what that tells me is you have a lot of big business people who don't want to be hanging out if there's a liquidity event. And it is a chilling signal. And so consolidating of power has been sort of, some of it has been put on a kibosh by the nature of the environment. But yes, I think there is an enormous consolidation. It'll be interesting to see how that rolls out, given that the Grove just finished. And we'll see what happens when we come in, take a look at sort of what the signals coming out of the new budget is. We'll know by October 1st. That'll be another big round of signals. I got a request to read one of Mike Adams' new warnings on Ebola and Monsanto. And what I just have to say is, please do not listen to Mike Adams, who is, his website is Natural News. You know, if he puts out a scare thing, a lot of it is terribly over-exaggerated. It's not well-informed. I don't trust his material. So please do be careful. While we're at it, please do also not trust Porter Stansberry. There are more than a couple people who really beat the drumbeat of fear, and they are not to be trusted. They do a very clever job of, I'm always getting requests from subscribers or clients saying, oh, should I get this Porter Stansberry product? It sounds just like you. They do a very good job of sort of scarfing up other people's speeches and then marketing to their subscribers and clients. So be very, very careful on both of those. If somebody is trying to persuade you of something based on something that is terrifying, you know, just please be careful. One thing I do want to note, and this is not about terror, this is just about practical and good sense. I want you to be ready for the 5% problem. Every year, the Solari team and I review and update and refresh our disaster recovery plan. We're required to by law, and so we do, but it's very good discipline, very good practice. I want to make sure I have at least 1 to 3 months of food and cash and provision on hand, and you should too. The reason is not because the end of the world is coming. It's not. The reason is, if you look at how people get in trouble, let me give you a sense of some of them. Katrina, the Kentucky power outages, New York floods, California forest fires, Toledo has water problems, tornadoes in Oklahoma, 9/11, tsunamis in Japan and Indonesia, the volcano ash in Iceland and Europe. Wherever you live, whether it's North America, Europe, Asia, whatever continents, these events happen, and they generally only hit one area, but they can happen to any of us, and the economic impact can ripple through the global economy in all sorts of ways. What I see is one of the greatest ways my subscribers lose time and effort is they worry about this stuff. If you're wise and prepared for the 5% chance that it's going to happen in your neighborhood over the next year, you don't have to worry because you've done it, you're prepared, and then you're free to rock and roll. So make sure you get free to rock and roll, because these things are going to continue to happen. To a certain extent, they always have, but the internet and the way we relate to each other really shows us our connections much more intimately and much more quickly. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to review what is to me just an absolutely inspiring documentary, Jodorowsky's Dune. It is the story of Chilean director Jodorowsky's efforts to make a movie from Dune. Several people have done it since he failed. Essentially, Hollywood pulled the plug on him, but be prepared to be amazed and delighted by the fact it's deep, deep history on many of the science fiction movies that you've watched and enjoyed over the years. What happened was an extraordinary team came together, produced extraordinary amount of intellectual capital in the form of how to do all sorts of special effects and all sorts of ways of showing different ideas in science fiction. And when the movie didn't get made, everybody split up and proceeded to use all of those ideas in many other different movies that got made over the next 10 to 20 years. When you listen to Jodorowsky talk about his vision, it's very beautiful. He said he wanted to make something sacred, something free that would open and change the minds of the young people. It was very powerful. I wish it had been made. It would have really rocked the world, I'm sure. And but just simply watching the documentary and listening to the team and what they were planning on doing, you had Dolly lined up to play one character, Mick Jagger lined up to play another. It would have been incredible. Our interview this week is with Joseph Farrell, and it's about the Middle Ages. And I'm sure everybody's thinking, with everything that's going on in the world with Ebola and the Ukraine and the slow burn fraying, how in the world do we have time to talk about the Middle Ages? In fact, if you want to understand the governance sort of system on planet Earth and what's going on today, history teaches very important and powerful lessons. And it's an absolutely fascinating discussion, as always, with Joseph, and delves into many topics that I think are not only of great interest to me and many of the people in the Salieri Report who study history, but I think are very pertinent to questions that we're asking about the governance system today. So I recommend it to you. I always enjoy talking with Joseph. Coming up next week, we have Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. Very important to talk about. We're in the weak period of the cycle for both equities and precious metals. But if you look at what's going on in terms of the real need to shift to real assets, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens to precious metals coming into the fourth quarter. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from Franklin and seeing what he's been seeing in his dealership over the last month or two. And of course, what he thinks of the charts. August 21st, John Rappaport will be joining us to discuss pandemics, politics, and unanswered questions. We will have a lot to talk about. So until next week with Franklin, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.